Let's go to history slide, please. Okay. Anybody that's anybody, as far as people that work in the water business, can tell you, you know, they all do the cliche thing about whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. I've heard that thing so many times it drives me nuts. This is really where that issue comes into play most, is on the issue of groundwater and how you deal with regulating groundwater. Groundwater law in Texas goes back to that whole issue of the English common law idea of how you deal with groundwater. Initially, it was kind of a shared resource. Everybody had theoretical access to it. It was loosely tied to the ownership of the surface. At the turn of the century, there was a famous lawsuit that happened in the decision. It's known as the East case that basically establishes the principle that we now call right of capture, rule of capture. It referred to groundwater as being secret and occult because there was no real groundwater hydrology then. You didn't have any of the data that we rely upon now. So Texas has functioned under some form or fashion of this rule of capture basically since that time. If you poll 10 landowners as to what rule of capture actually means for them legally, you will probably get 10 different answers. There is a pervasive train of thought that exists throughout most of rural Texas, amongst, in particular, the agricultural landowner, that says that I own the surface, I own everything underneath the surface, unless I've got some piece of paper where I've decided to do otherwise. In truth, That's mostly true, but kind of not true. Under the rule of capture, where there's no groundwater conservation district, you may take as much water as you can use and not waste. And you can do this even if it hurts the guy next door to you. So, for example, if you decide to put in an alfalfa field, and you put in a large well and you decide to irrigate alfalfa, and the guy next door to you had nothing but relatively shallow windmills, and you go into the same groundwater source that he was on, and you start sucking that water out, watering your alfalfa, and all of a sudden his windmill starts sucking air, you don't have to do anything to take care of him. Now, if you're going to be neighborly, you probably ought to, but the law doesn't say you have to do anything to compense him for that damage. It's even bigger when the stakes are higher, when people are talking about full-blown industries that are dependent upon water that move in, such as bottled water bottling companies next door to municipality, and they start to, you know, there's all kinds of questions that come into play on this. So right of capture has been recognized as needing some type of a modification by the state since the 40s. The prototype of the groundwater regulation was passed by the Texas legislature, in particular for the Ogallala Aquifer up in the Panhandle, where there was so much of that irrigated agriculture up there. And what they did was they allowed the local counties to be able to create for themselves a self-policing function. And in particular at that time, there, you know, ever since we've had an income tax, there's federal income tax implications for irrigated agricultural users as to their equipment and how they, I mean, my CPA friend over here can probably go into a little bit more detail about that, but there was a real vested interest in seeing something modify that unfettered right. Over the next 40 or 50 years, you began to see more and more of these locally created districts pop up. There was a state senator by the name of Bill Sims, who was a Texas sheep and goat raisers man from Concho County. And Bill Sims became the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee in the 1980s, and Bill Sims was a big proponent of groundwater conservation districts. And his idea was, he saw what was happening down in San Antonio with the catfish lawsuit. You all remember the catfish lawsuits where the guy had the basically artesian spring water coming up out of the Edwards, and he had channeled it into a deal to grow catfish. Sims said, you know what, the state's going to step in and probably try to manage this resource, and the only way you can stop them from doing that is creating a local groundwater conservation district. So the law was actually changed to make it easier to create these groundwater conservation districts. And eventually, the Texas legislature even said, it is our policy that the only way to manage groundwater in the state of Texas is through locally created groundwater conservation districts. It's interesting if you engage people in a discussion about private property rights when you begin to throw into the mix whether a groundwater conservation district is a limitation on the right of capture. You have some people that will have a bare knuckles fist fight with you saying that it's not. I think in truth it probably has to be, because a groundwater conservation district can tell you, you can't put your well here, you can put it over there because you're going to interfere with your neighbor. You know, if we want to manage our groundwater for the 50-year time period so that our grandchildren have water, we can't take more than this amount. That in and of itself is an inherent limitation on the right of capture. Let's go for the next slide, please.
Good, John.
Yes, sir.
Will you comment on the subsidence districts there, your last item on there?
Oh, go back. Go back a slide, please. Subsidence districts are down in the area where Mr. Scott is from, the Houston area down there. And literally a groundwater district is a subsidence district is a groundwater district on steroids. It is a groundwater district that has extreme powers and the ability to exercise those powers. And the reason why I got those powers is their duty is to stop that part of the state from dropping into the Gulf of Mexico. Because when you take out so much water of the ground in that Gulf Coast aquifer, the surface begins to sink as you depressurize the aquifer. So those groundwater conservation districts that we have throughout most of the state have very little power that they exercise relative to a subsidence district. A subsidence district is what's driving a lot of that demand that we're seeing now on the surface water side in Fort Bend County. I think at some point, Brazoria County will probably see a subsidence district or some type of subsidence regulation that will also drive people off of the groundwater they're on now onto surface water usage. Thank you. All right, go to the next slide, please. I'm sorry. Okay, I mentioned earlier the Senate Bill 1 came along and it changed the law on surface water transfers. And they added that balancing test that requires all this bureaucracy, and they had the whole junior rights thing in there. So while some people will argue that that has driven people to groundwater, other people argue that it hasn't. I think what you have to do is look at what has happened. There is no doubt that there has not been interbasin transfers authorized, nor has there really been anybody that has gone to try to get one. So we really don't know how the state would treat one if somebody came in with an amendment to do it. We also know that groundwater marketers have been very active over the course of the last 10 years, and they have leased up more land, and they have obtained and filed permit applications for more permits to use groundwater from groundwater conservation districts. So that we know that. We also know that landowners have increasingly looked at their groundwater assets as a marketable asset. More and more, we have seen people begin to look at that groundwater asset not so much as something that they want to have for their usage, but as something else to add revenue to help keep them on the home place. We have also seen more and more groundwater conservation districts created. Whereas for the first 40 or so years that we had the ability to create a groundwater district, there was probably a handful of those districts that were created mostly in the western part of the state and in the panhandle. After Senate Bill 1 happened in 1997, the entire rest of the state almost was covered with groundwater conservation districts. Almost everywhere in the state where there's groundwater to manage, we have a groundwater conservation district to manage it at some stage of its organizational life. A lot of these newer districts were created with special provisions, obviously because you have people, either their taxpayer interests or people like that are concerned about creating another level of bureaucracy. So a lot of the new districts have been created without ad valorem taxes. They've been created with user fees, so only the people that actually pump and use the water pay for the district. They'll allow a tax, but they cap it really low. Or they'll do certain things like that to make sure, because every one of these districts, when they're created by the legislature, they have to pass a local referendum to create the district. Go to the next slide, please. Right now there's approximately 88 groundwater conservation districts in the state. We've got a map we're going to put up here in a second that'll show you that. About 90% of the groundwater that's manageable is under the control of one of these districts. The thing that's really a challenge that I want you to think about is this. Probably 50% of these districts are so new that they are struggling to get up under their feet as a regulatory entity. And the state places a huge burden on that groundwater conservation district so it can get to where it can do its job. because it's got to assemble enough information to create regulations that can withstand a legal challenge. It's got to literally, in some cases, go out and create groundwater hydrology that is sufficient to support a regulatory decision that tells somebody no. Because when you get told no, there's a good chance you're going to go legal and sue somebody. And your regulations have to be able to withstand the scrutiny of a legal challenge. So these groundwater conservation districts have a huge job ahead of them, and most of the boards that sit at those groundwater conservation districts are just John Q. Public guys like you and me that are sitting out there that don't have any kind of a background in groundwater hydrology. They're just business people. So it's a huge learning curve and a huge challenge for these guys to be able to get up and going, and they've got some very, very technical and very scientifically oriented information they have to try to process. Next slide, please. I talked about they have to determine how much water they've got. How can you manage a resource towards some type of goal that you create unless you know what you're managing? So these guys are struggling to try to figure out, okay, how much water do you have? What is the inflow? What is the recharge to that aquifer, and where is it coming from within the area that you're regulating? Is it coming from the north side of the county or the south side of the county? Where does the groundwater recharge occur, and how quickly does it occur? Are you on an aquifer like the Edwards that every time it rains, 2 hours later, the well levels come up? Are you on an aquifer like the Ogallala that just recently they figured out there's any recharge that occurs at all through playa lakes? You know, they thought that was just a totally, you know, that's captured groundwater up there. You've got to determine that. You've got to determine all of those variables so that you can figure out, okay, what is this? The next step you got to do is you got to figure out, okay, as a regulatory entity, what is our goal for the future? Do we want to allow some type of mining of the aquifer where we're taking out more water than can be recharged into the aquifer? And if we're going to mine it, what's the rate of that? Are we going to manage, say, 50% of the water that's in the aquifer now is going to try to be there in 50 years? Or are we going to go a real conservative route and say, we want to limit withdrawals to only the amount of recharge that happens in our area? Anything above that is not sustainable over the long term, so we're not going to permit it. All of those things end up having to come into play. Let's go to the next slide, please. Some groundwater regulations are established broadly by the law. It's in Chapter 36 of the Water Code where all of these regulations come from. And then some laws are specific to each district. When the Texas legislature creates a district, it literally creates law. Each one of those districts becomes a little law to itself. Most of them will reference Chapter 36 regulations, but they will also add special provisions to those. So each one of these regulatory entities, these county, mostly single county entities, is a little piece of law unto itself. Generally speaking, though, in Chapter 36, similar to surface water law, household usage is exempt. Up to about 25,000 gallons per day is exempt. There are also exemptions for some industrial classes of water. There are exemptions for mining. The lignite mining industry in particular ends up having to produce a lot of groundwater to dewater an area so they can extract the lignite out of it. Lignite mining and that kind of activity is exempt. The oil industry, as you would imagine, had a very strong interest in making sure they were not subject to the local groundwater conservation district's regulatory authority. So water that's used for oil and gas drilling rigs and for secondary recovery and for fracking and all that kind of stuff, all that stuff, groundwater conservation districts cannot regulate those under Chapter 36 of the Water Code. State law also caps fees. A dollar an acre foot for agriculture is an example of that. It's interesting, too, because the law was changed to say that, and it was done the same time Senate Bill 1 was done, to try to make it clear that a groundwater conservation district cannot prohibit the movement of water outside of the district. So a district can't just bulk up and say, look, we're going to discriminate against Matt because Matt wants to take the water out of the district, but I'll give a permit to David Wheelock because he wants to just use it there locally. I mean, legally, there's a problem with going in and doing that, and the Water Code now in Chapter 36 spells it out pretty clearly. However, there are sufficient administrative and bureaucratic hurdles that a groundwater conservation district can put up, if it is so inclined, to practically make it impossible to move water out of the district. So while state law says you can't tell them no, and state law says you can't charge them so much that it's a practical matter, it's impossible for them to move that water out of the district in some type of a fee you may charge, it's a practical matter, they can, you can go into a bureaucratic do loop that you can never really ever get out of. So people that are looking at water as a long-term source of supply have to factor that into their plans when they look at doing a groundwater project. Let's go to the next slide, please. Okay. These are the major aquifers that we have. Gulf Coast Aquifer down here in yellow. This red one here is the Carrizo Aquifer, Carrizo Wilcox up here. Then you see the Trinity Aquifer that goes along in here, and this blue one right there, that's the Edwards. So those are the major aquifers that we have here in the state of Texas. Next slide. These are the patch of groundwater conservation districts that we have, the patchwork that we have in the Brazos Basin. You'll notice that we have all the way, just about everywhere where we've got groundwater districts that are in place. Go ahead, next slide, please. Last issues. State law was changed in 1997 to recognize that there is a hydrologic connection between groundwater and surface water. Up until that point, even though we all know intuitively that they're connected, the law treated them as separate critters. In Senate Bill 1, they actually put provision in Chapter 11 of the Water Code where the surface water stuff is, and Chapter 36 of the Water Code where the groundwater stuff is, that says, hey, these things are related to each other, and you can't treat them like they aren't. Now, they didn't go the next step and spell out how you're supposed to consider them. All they said was, TCEQ, when you're doing surface water permits, you need to think about the fact that there is a groundwater impact to what you're doing on surface water. Consider it. The law was also changed at the same time to add a provision about, and this is a simple concept, and we've been briefed on it in here before. You can take treated water, pump it down into the ground, and store it in the ground like you would a reservoir, and then produce it and use it later on. The concept is known as aquifer storage and retrieval. They have a big project out at El Paso that they're doing right now that Senator Hutchinson got a bunch of money for them to do, where what's a fort that's out at El Paso? Bliss. Bliss is using the ASR project that's out there where they're taking, you can use any source, you just have, the state just wants to make sure that it's clean. Pump it down in there and create a bubble of groundwater that you can go in and access later. And there's a lot of interest in doing this in the future because there's no evaporation. And if the groundwater formation is right, it really kind of holds that water there close. It's expensive. Right now, relatively speaking, it's more expensive than some of the other best options, so you're not seeing it. You're not seeing a lot of it widespread in the state of Texas. As water gets more expensive, you'll begin to see more and more of it. The last issue that I want to touch on is the issue of conjunctive use. You've heard us talk a lot about it. Yes, sir.
Question, all the water that these oil companies are putting back down in the ground, how do we know?
We don't. We theorize,
what
and
was
I
the
think.
Question? How do we know what?
He asked a question about all of the water that's being, the brine water that's being pumped back down into the ground. In some cases, they use it for secondary recovery. In other cases, they're just disposing of it. He said, how do we know that's not going to cause us problems with our freshwater? And I said, the answer to that is we don't. We theorize strongly, and the Railroad Commission regulates them, assuming that the hydrogeology that's in place that they prove up before they put that water down there is ironclad. So if I come into you at the Railroad Commission and say, hey, I'm going to inject this much of this salt water at this high level of salt down into this formation here, that our conventional wisdom that says that's going to be isolated is true, and that I'm going to do the right thing in how I complete my well, and it's going to be cased properly and all of those structural issues. By who it's being done by, it's. We have yet to see widespread pollution problems caused from that practice.
John, if you take surface water and inject it into the ground in an aquifer, does it then become groundwater from a right standpoint?
Well, no. From a right standpoint, it stays under your control for the most part. Now, If you're outside of a groundwater district, it's a little different than if you're inside a groundwater district. If you're inside a groundwater district and you want to do an ASR project, you would probably go through the groundwater conservation district and have them bless that, including the volumes of water that you're going to put in place beforehand. I even think some groundwater conservation districts have permitting processes set up for ASR type projects, but we haven't seen enough of it statewide where there's an established practice yet. Conjunctive use is a technical term that we use anytime we want to talk about using two sources together. Now, as a practical matter, when we use one set of reservoir up here out of one watershed with another set of reservoirs down here, that's conjunctive use in theory. But most often when you hear conjunctive use is talked about where you take either desal water and surface water or groundwater and surface water. Our interest at BRA has been in doing groundwater and surface water together. Our Carrizo project is totally predicated on a conjunctive use concept, talking about taking Carrizo groundwater, using it with surface water out of Lake Granger. So more and more going forward, you will see people use conjunctive concepts, either with groundwater and surface water, or wastewater return flows and surface water, or desalinated water and surface water, managed for the mutual benefit of whoever it is they're trying to serve. Our intake was predicated on being able to access groundwater to be able to do that at Lake Granger. We've oversized that intake at Lake Granger, so specifically we can use it in partnership with the groundwater that we would produce there. That's all of the bullet points on groundwater that I had to cover. Do you have any questions? Now that you've completely been overwhelmed.
I have a question just to clarify. So I understand this right. There's been a lot of discussion where I'm from, but about the groundwater conservation districts.
Yes.
I think the public thinks that the oil and gas companies will have to fall under that.
No.
That regulatory body because of the numerous and rapid taking of water for fracking in Johnson County.
They're specifically exempted, and that exemption is, as you can imagine, is very well protected. Very well protected. But the truth is, at some point, and it's just like some of these things we talked about in surface water, at some point somebody's going to have to reconcile that. Either they can manage the groundwater or they can't. Either we're going to give them the power to manage the groundwater effectively in areas where, like your Barnett Shale areas there, they're taking a bunch of water out for this. I mean, how's a groundwater district going to do its job if 70% of the water usage in the county is exempted?
John, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Phil, I think we're going to, okay. Initially, we had planned on having a conversation about the drought and how we dealt with the drought, but because of the time limitations, I think we're going to table that for now. This is going to be an ongoing series of informational meetings, so we'll have to put that off. Sorry, David, we're going to put you off till next time. And with that in mind, let's take about a 10-minute break, then we'll get into our regular board meeting.